Okay, so this is a problem I've become interested in. So the Morava E theories are the theories that are also called E sub n. We saw it in some other talks. It was really a program, I think, in the 90s, mostly by these guys, Ando, Hopkins, and Strickland. They were trying to understand the power operations for such theories. And the status of this is they learned a lot. But nonetheless, the program sort of stalled or went to abeyance. And it's actually only a small fraction of what they know has been published, which is always makes things kind of awkward. Anyway, I'd like to sort of get the program started again, so this is my attempt to do that. Excuse me. Can everybody hear me? My voice is not very strong today. All right. So, well, Matt's in the audience, and I can't rag him on this, but Neil's not here, and I don't see Mike here either, so I can make fun of him during the talk.
Whatever you want.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay. So, Morava E theory. So, these theories, they're associated to, they're complex-oriented theories associated to universal deformations of height-end formal groups over some field, perfect field. Usually we write En if it's associated to a height-end formal group. It really does not depend just on N, but on a formal group. I don't think I'll have any subscript to my E's because I'll work at one, with one at a time. The standard examples that we sort of know and maybe in this conference we're most interested in, if N equals 1, we have P-completed K theory associated to the multiplicative group. If N equals 2, there are various theories, which you can think of as elliptic cohomology theories. They're associated not to the full moduli space of elliptic curves or some cover of it, but rather to sort of a formal neighborhood of the supersingular curves in the moduli space of elliptic curves. These are related to, for instance, well, things like TMF and other elliptic cohomology theories. Okay, so cohomology theories come with operations. So we've already seen, for instance, in Tori's talk the other day, discussion of the stable operations. This is the Morava stabilizer group, which is really the automorphism group of the height-end formal group law. This acts on E cohomology. It acts on the E cohomology of any spectrum. But there are also some other operations which really arise just on the cohomology of a space. E cohomology of a space is a ring, and there's a bunch of unstable operations, and I'm going to be looking at a particular class of them called the power operations. Okay. So to get you interested in this, to analyze it, why is this the, sort of an interesting thing? So there's this thing that Matt Ando proved. So I don't know if I have the year right. I just made up the years for all the things I quote here since I don't have any references with me. But around this time, early 90s, Matt Ando constructed in his thesis a bunch of cohomology operations associated to level structures on the formal group, Friedenfeld level structures. It's a fairly intricate story to say what this means and how this works. As Matt pointed out to me once, that you know he stopped giving talks on this subject after a while because he found he always had to explain what a level structure was. And by the time he'd done that, he'd finished his talk already. So I'm not going to try and not make that mistake. So that in general, the way he writes it, you get an operation that goes from E cohomology to some flat extension of E cohomology. That's this ring DA, which classifies level structures. But maybe the thing we should take home from that, if we sort of sum up over sort of all level structures of an appropriate type, we get Heck operators. So we have a bunch of operators. Let's call these, well, in particular, there's ones called T, P to the K, TPK, and some others. And these are operators on the cohomology of E itself. So these are sort of formal sums of it and of power operations. Descend down to the target of E cohomology itself. If you're at height N, the full algebra of these Heck operators is a polynomial algebra on N generators. That's actually the same Heck algebra that David Spence-V was talking about the other day, associated to GLN. I think I wrote here a span of a TPK, that's not quite right. It's a little bit bigger than that. Anyway, it is a polynomial algebra. So this is neat. There's a polynomial algebra of power operations acting on the EN cohomology of a space, and it's really the classical Heck algebra. I wrote some examples here. If n equals 1, I don't know if you can see that because it's at the bottom of the page. Let up. If n equals 1, these are just the Adams operations, psi p to the k. P here, I'm always working locally at a prime. This is at the prime, at p. For these elliptic ones, these Heck operators are essentially the classical, or are related to the Heck operators on modular forms, maybe up to some scalar or something. So this is the story. I see Mike has come in. I can't make fun of him now. Well, let's leave this up. What am I doing? Sorry. I can just not allow him to take notes, I suppose. So as I said, these guys have this program to understand these power operations. Yeah. Is that up or down or focus? It's focus. I point this up, but it'll do something bad, I'm sure. Oh, here we go. Very good. So, let me sort of formalize this sort of what I want in the following way. So power operations really arise from the fact that I'm dealing with ring spectra. So there's this fact, which I've stated here as a fact, it's a theorem now, due to various people. The Moravian E theory is actually a commutative S algebra, in the strong sense, strictly commutative. Let me take the category of modules over E, module spectra. And I'm actually going to look at K and local module spectra. There's this game you play, which I'm not going to sort of keep talking about in the talk, where somehow what I always want to do, I never want to just do the operation with spectra. I want to always K and localize what I have if it's not already K and local. That's a game to make the answers look better. Would that be the right thing to do? Okay. So let's consider these functors. So I'm not sure that looks very good. PM of M, M is a module spectrum. That's just sort of the nth extended power. Take the smash product of this module over the ground ring, which is E, M times, and take the homotopy orbits by sigma M. That's a functor on this category. And if I take the direct sum of all of them, that gives me a triple. I've just written it's just some kind of triple on the homotopy category of modules, but of course with technology, you can actually make this a triple on the actual category. And so the thing I want to look at are the appropriate kind of E algebra spectra, which will be algebras over this triple. The technical name is an H infinity E algebra or something. This includes, maybe the key example is the function spectrum the suspension spectrum of a space to E. That is a P algebra. It's an algebra, commutative algebra over E. So this is sort of the cochains on E. Come sense? So the question is, what are the natural kinds of operations on the homotopy of a ring like this? An algebra R. For instance, on this function spectrum, whose homotopy groups are really the cohomology of the space X. So these are going to be the power operations. Let me formalize this in the following way. Let's see. I'll do this. I want to make sort of an algebraic analog of this construction. So here's what I want to do. I want to take a ME star is the category of graded modules over the plain old ring, E star, the coefficient ring. you'd like to have some kind of functor, which I've called CM, on that category, which sort of approximates the homotopy of PM. So if I want to compute the homotopy of PM of a module big M, I should approximate that by some algebraic functor applied to the homotopy of M, which is an E star module. Approximation means that sort of it should be at least close to an equivalence. Isomorphism, and I like to put them all together so that this is actually a triple on the algebraic category of E star modules. So this is the algebraic approximation. So this is the game you can play. And if you do that, then pi star of the ring is actually a C algebra. An algebra over this algebraic triple. So in some sense, the whole problem is to understand the C algebras once you have this set up. The original example So the case where I know this has been done is in this work of Jim McClure, and I just made up the year again. I have no idea when that was. for ordinary cohomology, with Mod P coefficients, this is the story of the classical Dyer-Lashoff operations, and you can construct the approximation triple C. And sort of the case, the other case he did was K-theory. This was really a very new case at that time. For p-adic K-theory, we can say there is a kind of approximation triple, and he determined the structure of that triple. And so I'm going to tell you how that goes. Not quite in this language, but very close to it. Okay. Let's see. Let me sort of discuss how this is done. So, I have to say, this is, I've never quite seen this done out in this way, and I just feel like this is really easy, yet I've never really seen anybody do it in exactly this way. So let me pick out a subcategory of the E category of E module spectra. They're supposed to be, it's FE, they're supposed to be the finitely generated free modules. So they're ones that have the homotopy type of E smash a finite wedge of some spheres of various dimensions. I'm even going to include odd dimensions here. Here's a little lemma. If I start with an E module spectrum, which is in some sense free, and if I take the apply this functor to it, PM, this extended power stress functor, I also get something that's finitely generated and free. this is actually sort of well known if the thing's concentrated in even degrees, but you can prove it in general too. I actually sketched out the proof here. So the proof is to sort of look at a simple example. Instead of looking at the symmetric groups, let's do the cyclic group of order P. So PCP is the same kind of extended power, but just objects are divided up by the cyclic group. So the basic example is what's PCP of just the free module and one generator. E is a periodic spectrum, so I have to suspend E, but I only have to consider two cases, n equals 0 and n equals 1. Let's see. If n equals 0, well, what do I get here? I just get this construction. Really, I'm just applying something to the 0 sphere. I'm taking this construction to the 0 sphere, and that's just the classifying space of the cyclic group. And so that object, E smash B of the cyclic group, is really a free module over E. And remember, it's good to remember here that I'm KN localizing. The E homology, the E homology of a classifying space is usually poorly behaved, but localizing fixes that. If it's odd, here's what I do. Well, this is what this looks like. If I have a suspension coordinate, and I take this extended power construction, I essentially get a Thome space. So say I have the Thome space over BCP by VP, that's the bundle associated to the regular representation of the cyclic group. And I mean the real regular representation. And that splits into a trivial factor and sort of the reduced part, the rest. And you sort of observe here that, well, there are two cases. If P equals 2, that reduced part is just the sine representation. If you twist the BC2, which is really the real projective space, by the sine representation, we know that that's actually the real projective space again. So that actually is just a suspension of BC2. And so that's a retract of this thing up here, which is free. If P is odd, I have a similar description, but now VP bar is more complicated. On the other hand, so as a real representation, it breaks up as a sum of two-dimensional representations, which are really SO2 representations. excuse me. Every P cycle is even if P is an odd prime. And so I can apply the Thome isomorphism. The E homology of that guy is actually isomorphic to the E homology of BCP up to a shift. So that will also, its E homology will be free. And I should have mentioned here that as long as I know what the E homology is finitely generated free, then I know that the module has this form. And then the sort of the general proof is you just string this together using some standard techniques, which I won't go into. If you compose functors of this type, that's like taking the extended power construction of the iterated wreath product. That's a P-pseudo subgroup of the symmetric group on P of the K. And you can show that that splits off using transfer techniques. That's sort of a standard line of proof. So I have this algebraic approximation functor on free modules. I really only need it for the even degree for what I'm going to do but it's sort of nice that it works in general. I extend this now to the whole category of E-star modules in the following way. The free modules form, in either case, of E-modules or of E-star modules are some full subcategory. The functor that takes a free module and assigns its homotopy groups actually gives an equivalence of categories from the homotopy category of free modules to E-star modules. So I can define CM on this category, on this category via PM on this category. So they'll be the same. And then I can extend to this category by a con extension. If I do that, it comes with an approximation map, and it's actually an equivalence of the thing I plug in is finitely generated and free. That's the kind of game we want to play. So this is the functor I want. I think this argument's known. I'm not claiming originality here. Let's see. Let's just do McClure's calculation here. So the remark at the top, basically the way you think of the category of C algebras, basically, you're taking the homotopy of a ring spectrum, so it'll be a grade commutative ring, and then it comes with some extra data, which are operations, unary operations of some type. In some way, we have to describe this triple in those terms. This is McClure's description for K-theory. So there are a couple of operations you can write down. Psi p is the Adams operation associated to psi p, the Adams operation. There's this other operation, which is called q, which is related to the Adams operation by this equation. Psi p of x is x to the p plus p qx. Psi p is an additive operation. It's a ring operation even. Q is not, as is manifest from the formula. But if I calculate the free C algebra on one generator in even degree, this is a polynomial algebra in an infinite set of generators. I have sort of the basic generator T, and then I apply Q to T and Q to Q of T, and so forth. I iterate applications of Q to T, and those are my polynomial generators. That's sort of the story in that case. Okay. Now. Excuse me. So. All right. Typically, here's the way I think of this. Let's think about this free C algebra in one generator. If I have an element in that thing, then I can associate to that some operation on a C algebra. So R here represents a C algebra. X has some element in it. I can represent that by a map from E star to R that represents the element X. Since R is a C algebra, I can extend that to the free C algebra on the generator E star. Let's call that map X twiddle. And now alpha is an element in here, and I get another map alpha from E star into here, and I just take the image of 1 under this composite, and that's phi alpha of X. So it's some operation parameterized by this element X in the free algebra on one generator. So for instance, if I take Q of T in McClure's description, that actually parameterizes the operation Q. Sort of tautologically. Now, the point here is that you want to sort of understand the structure of this, and this is sort of a complicated thing. You have this commutative ring. You can also think of it as operations, and you can compose them. And so there's this other product, which is some kind of composition product. The operations are, in general, additive, so it won't be bilinear in sort of the right sense. So it's sort of hard to sort of figure out how to decide what to do with this. I'm going to deal with this by sort of just breaking down and just reducing to some additive algebras of additive operations. And this is what I call the Dyer-Lashoff algebras. And there are sort of two versions that you can consider. So the first one is called A. So I'm writing it's going to be some kind of graded object, graded by M. AM is the elements alpha in the mth part of the free C algebra. which correspond to additive operations. And if you write down what the condition is you need for that, it amounts to the elements that are in the kernel of this pair. So the top map comes from applying CM to the diagonal. The bottom map comes from applying CM to each of the inclusions and taking the sum. So that's some kind of primitives. So as you sort of work it, it's really the primitives and the, when you work it down, it's the primitives and the e-homology of symmetric group. And with respect to the sort of the transfer maps to all these smaller subgroups, sigma I cross sigma j, where I and j add up to n. There's another version, which it's also good to consider, which I'm going to call D. So D is going to be the dual thing. So it's a graded object. The nth part is the co-kernel of a similar pair of maps, if I take the maps going the other way. That's some kind of indecomposables. It's really some kind of indecomposable quotient of the homology of the symmetric group on M by these subgroups. Okay. I have a feeling I'm going too fast for you. Maybe it's okay. So that this is maybe less obvious a thing to consider, but here's the sort of natural context. So if I have some algebra, let's say it's augmented over E. So it's not just an E algebra. It's got an augmentation back to E. For instance, the E cohomology of, well, let's go to the next line, E cohomology of any space. This algebra D naturally acts, I don't know if it's clear it's an algebra yet, but it acts on the indecomposable quotient of the augmentation ideal. That is, I've modded out by operations whose values are necessarily decomposable. That's what I've done here. So it naturally acts on this quotient. So pi zero r bar is just the augmentation ideal. So the standard example to think about is the E cohomology of a suspension. That already is something where the augmentation ideal squares to zero. So D acts naturally on that. So these are the two algebras I want to consider. I think these guys considered both of them before me. I don't really know. So for example, let's do the K-theory example. A, in that case, is just the polynomial algebra on the psi p's, on just psi p. D is the polynomial algebra on this operation Q. Q is not additive, but it's additive mod decomposables. So it becomes an element in Q. D. This is the picture. I'm going to consider these two dual constructions. Let's see. Okay. I have to warn you here. I'm writing these things as algebras. It has nothing to do with the ring structure on C of E, which is quite different. It's not the algebra structure on A or D is given by composition of operations. And you translate in the end to some operation involving wreath products of symmetric groups. I won't go into that. Let me discuss so the nice thing is that A has really a good formal group interpretation. This is something that is at least largely in part in print. some papers of Strickland. So here's what he does. Well, first off, something obvious. It turns out that just the only parts you have to consider are the pieces corresponding to symmetric groups of order P of the K. So I'm going to regrade. I'm going to write A sub K for the P of the K-th part. And so there's A again. So it's actually going to be some kind of graded algebra. Each AK is a finally generated free E0 module. This is a non-trivial fact that comes out of Strickland's work, and I need it. It's quite non-trivial, so at least I think. It's a ring by composition of operations. It includes this coefficient ring, E0. By the way, I seem to have sort of... I could do this in sort of all degrees at once, but I'm sort of already slipping to just talking about pi zero, degree zero part, just for simplicity. Since the thing's periodic, that's not too much of a loss. So the coefficient ring of the zero, degree zero part, which is E0, is a subring. It's not in the center, and you have to get used to that. Effectively, this algebra actually acts non-trivially on the e-cohomology of a point. And that's encoded by the fact that this thing sits inside. It's not central. the information that makes it, the fact that it's not in the center is because there's a non-trivial action. So it's some kind of algebra for E0, but in some twisted way. Another structure this has, this A comes with a kind of co-product, which actually comes from the diagonal and symmetric groups. Sigma M goes to sigma M cross sigma M, just a standard diagonal map. And the thing that encodes about operations is a Cartan formula. So it's sort of interesting. I mean, this is sort of why A has to be bigger than the Heck algebra. A includes this classical Heck algebra H, but A also has this co-product including a Cartan formula. And hey, you can't do that with a Heck algebra. There's no formula for Heck operation applied to a product. So that's the extra structure this has. this is some kind of Hopf algebra thingy. I actually don't know what the correct term for an object of this type is. The easiest thing to say is that it's dual to something which is basically a Hopf algebraid. Let's say it this way. Let's take gamma k be the linear duals of the AKs, and then this pair, E0 and the gamma star, is basically a Hopf algebraid. It's something that models a category in schemes. The objects are the formal scheme associated to E0, and those are just the formal deformations of Fn. That's what that space is. The morphisms, which will be the disjoint union of the formal schemes associated to the gamma k's, I wrote it this way. They're going to be isogenies of formal groups, isogenies between the deformations, which itself deform the Frobenius map on Fn. So Fn is defined over a field of characteristic P. It's got a Frobenius map and powers of the Frobenius map. A deformation is just a formal group over a bigger ring who's on a special fiber you can identify with Fn. And I just want to say that I'm just going to look at isogenies, which are some power of Frobenius on the special fiber. another way to say this, which is sort of the way that what Neil actually writes, there's sort of one-to-one correspondence between isogenies of this type and subgroups of the deformation formal group. And so these gamma k's really classify subgroup schemes. This observation, I don't know that this is in the literature anywhere, but I'm sure it's known to these folks. I wrote question mark here because it's not even a Hopf algebraid, because a Hopf algebraid is supposed to model a groupoid, and this just models a category. Maybe this is a bi-algebraid or something. I don't really know. Anyway, that's the formal group interpretation that they have. Is it a monoid? No, it's a category. It's not split. It's basically, because you see it in the dual case, because the E0 is not central. And so this thing, the A to left and the A to R, are quite different, if you will. Great. That's A. It has a good formal group interpretation. Let me say a little bit about the other algebra, D. This is sort of the one I think in practice you might actually want to compute with more. This is related, for instance, to things like topological Andrei-Quillen homology. so, for instance, if I have I need a commutative ring spectrum, commutative E algebra, augmented over E. And then there's this functor which is called TAQ, and it's some way of taking sort of the derived functor of the indecomposables of the algebra spectrum. I won't talk about the definition. You might want to do something like calculate the homotopy of TAQ, and you would end up doing something like the following schematic picture. You'd have some chain of spectral sequences. So the thing that would approximate the homotopy of TAQ would be the Andrei-Quillen homology of C algebras. So those would be the derived functors of abelianization of C algebras. Effectively, abelianization of a C algebra involves two parts. You first have to take the commutative algebra in decomposables. Now, that still has a residual action by this algebra D. Then you have to mod out by the non-trivial operations in D. And so if you work that out, you'll see in good cases you get a composite functor spectral sequence. So the inner thing here is the Andrei-Quillen homology, just the classical Andrei-Quillen homology of this ring pi star of R over pi star of E. And you want to sort of work tensor down to E star by this action of D. So there's some sort of tor term. So this is just to tell you what the sort of thing you want to do with this D. For applications of this type, you want to be able to do homological algebra with D. Here's a fact which is, gosh, this is not well sort of attested in the literature, although parts of it are. These two rings, A star and D star, are actually isomorphic as rings. Neil proves in his paper that these things are actually isomorphic as E modules, E star modules. In fact, what he says is that this DK is really a co-module over the AK, which is a co-algebra. The co-algebra is structured on the diagonal on the group, and it's co-free on one co-generator. So that gives you actually an isomorphism between the two of E star modules. And the co-generator you can actually give. So DK is a quotient of the homology of V sigma P of the K. And so the co-generator is a map like this. This group is free and it's dual to the cohomology. It pairs perfectly with the cohomology of V sigma P of the K. And this map is dual to the Euler class of the reduced regular representation on sigma P of the K. This is actually the complex regular permutation representation, not regular representation. You can prove a little bit more. After all, well, what does this mean? The Euler class actually depends on the orientation. So there's lots of choices of co-generators. I want to show that these are isomorphic as rings, so really what I want to show is that the co-generators are compatible with the product structure, which amounts to something about Reith products. And I guess I haven't written that out here, but if you choose an H-infinity orientation of E, which exists by Endo's thesis, then you can actually show that the cogenerators are compatible with multiplication. And so this actually gives a ring isomorphism. I think you guys knew these things in some form. I sort of don't know. But okay. So that's sort of the short outline of sort of in general what one knows about this theory. So as I said, the thing I'm focusing on is how do you do homological algebra over D? Well, the following conjecture is sort of the natural one to make. So this is probably my only contribution to the subject is to formulate a conjecture. here it is. So this thing's a Kazuul. The conjecture is this is a Kazuul algebra. Okay, I'll say what that is. And the same applies for A. They're isomorphic. Why is this a Kazuul algebra? What does this mean? So let's consider the bar construction for D. So this is the reduced and normalized bar construction. So in degree Q, it looks like this. We'll take the augmentation ideal of D and take the, it's supposed to be a Q-fold tensor product. Well, great aim. That's a complex. The maps come from either sort of the multiplication or sort of the end phase maps, the simplicial object, or really the zero map. So this is the thing that's supposed to compute Tor over D of E0 with itself. Now, in this particular complex, because it's a graded algebra, I can actually grade all the pieces in this bar complex. So the kth graded piece in the qth degree of this complex is just going to be the sum of all the tensor products, where I do this over terms whose degree adds up to k. Incidentally, before I forget, I should point out here, remember, E0 is not central in this algebra. So when I'm writing down these tensor products, I'm always doing a bimodule tensor product. I won't say anything about that anymore. So that's always a bimodule tensor product. This graded piece is actually a subchain complex. So the complex itself is graded as a chain complex. This one's actually a bounded complex. The top dimension is dimension k, which you just have d1 tensor d1 tensor d1 a bunch of times and so forth. So here's what we do. Here's the definition. We say that D is Kazuul if the homology of these graded pieces is concentrated in the top degree. is Stuart Preen's definition. This has many wonderful consequences. First consequence, this implies that the algebra is quadratic. So it's a graded algebra. Quadratic means it's generated in degree 1, and all the relations are in some sense degree 2. They can be described by a subset of D1, tensor D1. That's a set of relations. Those are the generators for the ideal that in the tensor algebra that describes this algebra. Even better, you get a Kazule complex. So if I write CK for this homology of this kth grade piece, it's actually going to end up being a free East R module just formally. And the Kazule complex for any module is a complex of this type. I probably want some Freinet's hypothesis of M over the ground ring East R, but I'll get a complex where the pieces are D tensor CI tensor M. Each degree is actually a free D module, and the differential is a formula for it. The Kazule complex just comes from looking at the big bar construction, the two-sided bar construction with D, D, and M. But then you sort of filter it in the same way I did this. So in the Qth degree of this guy, I have D tensor, a bunch more copies of D, and then M on the other end. And so I sort of filter it by the total degree of the middle piece. The associated gradeds are essentially this thing tensored up on both sides, and that lets me compute the E1 term. And Kazule means that the E1 term is almost at the end. You have to collapse by E2 and just get a chain complex. That's the Kazule complex. Yeah? No, that's not true. And sometimes the I mean, this is sort of the right homological version of quadratic. I mean, somehow the way I think of it. Quadratic is equivalent to this statement being true for star equal to 1 and star equal to 2. Let's see. Once you have sort of this theory of the Kazule complex, then you even know something about the Poincaré series of the C. So the Poincaré series of D is known. That comes out of Strickland's paper. It's a graded object. There it is. It amounts to counting subgroups in VP to the n-fold product of the p-addicts or something. The Poincaré series of the dual is related to the Poincaré series of D. I'll move this up. It's essentially the reciprocal. In particular, that's, of course, a polynomial. So, in fact, if this works, then the Kazule complex for our D is actually finite. It's bounded. This is the formula for these. It's the Gaussian binomial coefficient. So these guys, in some combination, actually had a conjecture along these lines that there was some explicit way to construct a finite resolution to resolve D modules. I just don't think they had sort of the picture that this is this bar construction picture of Kazule duality, of the Kazule algebra. So this would be a nice thing to prove, and I cannot prove it. I should leave that up here. Nice thing, I should leave it up. So this is what I can prove, which is sort of the easy thing to try to do. And by the end of the talk, maybe you can prove it too, because it's not hard to prove. So if I take these, calculate the homology groups of these pieces and just invert P, then it's concentrated in degree K. In other words, it's sort of Kazule up to torsion in some sense. That's sort of the evidence for the proposition. Of course, the other evidence is the theory of the classical Dyer-Lashoff algebra. That is known to be Kazule by a proof which is not sort of in any way the thing I'm going to show you now. So Stuart Preedy proved a theorem that if you have an algebra which has a sort of a nice notion of an admissible basis satisfying certain properties, then you could show it was Kazule. With our last without, there is known by generation relations, which are some form of Adam relations, and that satisfies this property. So the classical dialash algebra for mod p cohomology is certainly Kazuel. But that sort of comes from knowing the whole structure of the algebra. And somehow I want to sort of be lazy. I sort of want to get this without knowing the whole structure of B. That's sort of the goal that I would like to do. So let me try to, for the rest of the talk, I'll prove this proposition. Well, first step is quite clear. You introduce the partition complex. So let's see. So this is the exact same thing that appeared in Michael Ching's talk. So QM dot, I'm going to call it. So I take the nerve of the partition poset of a set with NM elements. So those are partitions of the set ordered by refinement of all such partitions. And I divide up by two subcomplexes. So I have sort of the two subposets where I either remove the top element or the bottom element and take their union. That quotient is going to be a pointed simplicial set. I need another notion here, which is just a kind of simple linearization concept. So I'm going to do this as functors from spectra. I can do this from functors from any additive category. Suppose I have a functor from the homotopy category of spectra to abelian groups, which takes the point to zero. Then I'll define this del f as some kind of linearization, and it's kind of like what I do to define d. So I'll just take the f of a wedge a, and then these two obvious maps I can write to f of a, either the fold or the sum of the two projections, and apply f and then take the sum, and take the co-kernel, and that's some kind of linear quotient of the functor f evaluated at a. So it's a baby version of the derivative. First derivative. For reasons that I'm coming to, I'm going to use this alternate sort of differential notation for this thing. So if f is a functor of the variable x, then I write del x for the derivative in the variable x, and then I'll evaluate it at something a. It's just notation. There's a kind of theory of a chain rule here. It's not so great, but there is a natural map between del of a composite and the composite of the dels. Under good conditions, that will be an isomorphism. So, for instance, it turns out in this case, I'm going to know that things, the sort of del of f actually splits, it could be split off f of a, and that's sort of enough to give me sort of enough control to have a chain rule. So, here's the lemma. So how do you read this? So I'm starting with looking at basically this is really a complex. So I'm going to always insist on having this dot in my QM because I'm thinking of it as a simplicial set. And I'm looking at the complex associated to the taking homology. So in each simplicial degree, that's a pointed set with a sigma M action. I could just take the E homology of Borel homology with respect to sigma M. But what I'll do is I'll twist this by the nth smash power of some space x, and I'll take the derivative in the x variable, and now I'm just going to evaluate it at the zero sphere. And the claim is that this maps to this kth graded piece of the bar complex, and that's actually an isomorphism. Okay. And this is a normalized sort of a normalized complex I might have by degeneracies, and I guess I want to do that here too. It should be there somewhere. But anyway. Why is this so? Yep. So here's the idea. So let's just think about, so I'm doing this in each simplicial degree of QM. It's a pointed simplicial set. So I'm just looking at pointed sets with a sigma M action. So I'll just think about the first case of a single orbit, sigma m mod h. So what happens if I apply this construction to this? So there's del x of that thing, with sigma m h. So it's this co-kernel. I've used this funny notation. Remember, I'm to do this, to evaluate at this zero sphere, I'm going to have up here, I'm going to have S0 wedge S0, then smash to the nth power. And really, what is that? Well, S0 smash at wedge S0 is 2 points of the disjoint base point. So that really is going to be the, I can think of it as the mapping space from an M element set to a 2 element set, which I write as 2 to the M, or which is the power set on M. That's what goes in there. So it's easy, best way to think of this is sort of the power set has these three pieces. You've got the trivial, the empty subset, you've got the full subset, and you've got everything else, proper non-trivial subsets. If you think about what the two maps do, so this will break up into sums according to the in three pieces, according to these things. The two extreme end pieces map the same way under these two maps. So effectively, I'm not dividing out by them at all in here. But it's the middle pieces. One of the maps will send the middle parts to zero, and the other one will do something non-trivial to it. In particular, let's look at the following case. If H is a subgroup of sigma M, and if I think about its action on the M element set, and if it acts non-transitively, then if I think about sort of the obvious projection from sigma M cross mod H to cross this sort of non-trivial part of the power set down to this, this has a sigma M equivariant section. What is that? Well, it acts non-trivially on M, so I can find a subset, proper non-trivial subset of the M element set, which is preserved under the action of this group H. So there's a section. I can use that to define the section. In this case, if I take this quotient here, that means since it splits off, that everything here will actually be in the image. So the star, which is the whole derivative here, is just zero. In the case that H is acts non-trivially on M. So this del construction really kills the isotropy, which is acts non-transitively on the M element set. It also does stuff to the rest, the stuff that acts transitively. But if you think about how this works, in the qth degree of this QM, so a Q simplex is a chain of partitions, word by refinement, of the M element set. If you have a single partition, a single partition that's isotropic group looks like some product of Reith products. The number of factors, you get a factor for all the blocks in the partition of a given size. The only way that product of Reith products can act transitively on the M element set is if it's just a single Reith product. And that just happens if your partition has all of its blocks the same size. More generally, if you have a chain of partitions, the isotropic groups of things are kind of complicated, but it's still true that the only way that the isotropic group can act transitively on the M element set is if all the partitions in the chain have, each partition has blocks of the same size. And then the isotropy subgroup of such a thing looks like an iterated Reith product. So when I do this derivative construction to this guy, those are the only parts that are left. And what I'm doing when I mod out just on those parts is, well, this is the same kind of linearization that I used to define D. So if I take the extended power construction of something, or take the classifying space and mod out by these transitive things, then this chain rule gives me that the thing that is exactly left over is this, the degree of this bar complex. I don't think that, I'm not sure I said that very well, but that's all that's left. So anyway, now you, for the rational thing, you just calculate. So sort of HKR here. So if I want to calculate I'm writing sort of a homology version of it, the E homology of the homotopy orbits of Y. So if I invert P, I can write this as a coend. Here's the coend, that integral. I got to have derivatives, I have to have an integral. So A ranges over, essentially over abelian subgroups of G, and you divide out whenever there's a way to conjugate one subgroup into another. So this will be a quotient of the direct sum of all these things, E star of BA smash the A fixed points of Y. And I divide out by all terms where if A prime conjugates into A, then I have BA prime smash YA, and I mod out by all those, that's a coend. And so there's really an exercise. The point is that to linearize on the left in this picture, well, it's going to be essentially the same as linearizing on the right. So if I do this on the right-hand side, you sort of work out what that is. You're, first of all, killing all the abelian subgroups of the symmetric group that act non-transitively. And then what's left over, you know, if A acts spatially on a set, it acts freely, and if it acts transitively, then on an M element, it actually has to have order M. So you're just going to get a bunch of terms. It's really just going to be a direct sum associated to all these abelian subgroups, which act transitively on M. They all have order M. So essentially, I'm removing all the terms in the coend that involve Y to the A, where A is non-transitive. I still have some relations I divide out by. So I'll take the E homology of BA smash the A fixed points, modulo sort of the E homology of BA prime smash the same fixed points, where that sum is over all the proper subgroups of A. That's sort of what's left over in the coend. And since I'm supposed to identify things up to conjugacy, I just divide out by the Weyl group of A. So this is still a complex. I want to think of this as a complex, so I have a simplicial degree. And the way it's written now, the differential really depends on something from QM fixed by A. Now, I was interested really if M was P of the K, and then here's what that looks like. If you take this partition complex and fix it by the abelian transitive abelian group, this is actually something related to the poset of abelian subgroups of A. In the same way, the partition complex came from partitions. So it's the nerve of the subgroup poset of A modulo these two subposets where I remove either the top or bottom element. It's fairly easy to show that if A is not elementary abelian, then that's actually contractible. If A is elementary abelian, then this looks, by the classical theorem of Tietz-Solomon about the Tietz building for GLK, this is a wedge of, basically, in this case, it's the K-sphere. And it's this many copies, P to the K, P to the K minus 1 over 2. And this is related to the infamous Steinberg representation of GLK. So the top homology is the Steinberg representation, some projective representation of GLK carries this action. Anyway, you put this all together in this coend, the only term that is going to, you're going to have this complex, which I'm computing using this coend. Most of the terms coming from most of the subgroups are trivial, so they're acyclic. It's trivial homology, so they're acyclic. The only non-trivial sumand, or piece, comes from this elementary abelian, and that gives me a calculation of the complex. And by this Tietz-Solomon theorem, all the homologies concentrate in 1 degree. That's exactly what I wanted. So the sort of the answer you get, in fact, is not only do you get CK, you get this at least rational description of CK. And I've described it this way. You take the homology of the elementary abelian mod the stuff that's in the image of the proper subgroups, and then you take the Steinberg idempotent piece of that. Even this, it turns out, is not really known. Mike tells me he was thinking along these lines. But I think this is sort of a nice way to encapsulate what the relationship is and why this appears. This is related to lots of other work. Mitchell Priddy's splitting of the classifying space, for sure, of elementary abelian. Also this work of Aron Mohold on the identity functor. So the partition complex also appears in the description of the layers of the identity functor. They actually prove a very similar kind of theorem. Now, they don't do this weird kind of linearization. What they do is they just twist the partition complex by powers of an odd sphere, and they want to compute the homology of that. But something similar happens. That sort of has a very similar effect to this linearization. And what they discover in that case, they can compute the homology because that complex is also essentially acyclic, except for homology and concentrated in one dimension. And that's how they compute the homology of the layers of the Goodwillie tower. They sort of do the same kind of argument. And Aron Dwyer have sort of another, wrote another paper with sort of a better perspective on that proof. Anyway, so what I'm hopeful for is not only is this a good way to sort of formulate the problem, I'm hopeful that there's some tools that you can take from these papers and sort of use it to actually show that in this EN case, this Dirichlet algebra is Kazuhl. Somehow it ought to be a general principle. I don't quite know what would be involved in doing that. somehow the tool that gets used in all these things is much use of of transfers, and that's sort of what has to be worked in here. So anyway, that's all I have. CE stars. I guess, I mean, the D is kind of the linear quotient of the CE, and you could take sort of a, I mean, there's really a quadratic piece in that too, and so you could formulate it that way. It seems like the natural problem was to discover the linear piece first. It seems likely it does. I just don't know how to formulate it. What do I know? Oh, I don't have that much. That's why I want to do all this. I don't really know how to even go about describing CE star, so I'm just sort of concentrating this through. Yeah, I mean, not that I know. That's what we want. Yeah?
So to make this chronological algebra useful, you have to think about unstable conditions.
I'm not sure what do you mean by unstable condition? So it's probably, I mean, I'm sort of, the operations, nothing over the operations on the homotopy of a, you know, H infinity algebra. So that
the properties of those operations depend upon the dimension of the class that you're
applying to? Not especially, no. I'm not even sure I'm using the right term, because sometimes you want to talk about the operations on the homology of an infinite loop space, and I think there you do have such things, but if you just look at the homotopy of the H-infinity algebra, I don't think that comes into play. You sort of exactly don't have this instability phenomenon, unstableness phenomenon. It sort of makes it a little bit easier. Yeah. Oh, he has. K2, so for E2. I was not aware of that. Okay. Yeah. Huh? Okay. I mean, I'm not sure what there's this, of course, I talked about these power operations, but there's also the story of the stabilizer group. So if you take the E cohomology of a space, you have both things acting, and so they're going to be related by some Nishida-type relations. And you can say, sort of in terms of sort of the homology of the symmetric groups, how that's supposed to work out. What happens is the Heck algebra is invariant under the stabilizer group. I suspect the answer is that's exactly the invariant, the part of A that's invariant in the stabilizer group. Right? That's probably the right answer. That's sort of its role. That's a guess, but it seems plausible. Yeah? Yeah? Yeah. So you have sort of two, you know, you fix a ring, and you have two deformations of Fn to this ring, two different formal groups. So the deformation means that there's some isomorphism of the special fiber, some given isomorphism of the special fiber to Fn. Let's pretend sort of the groups divide over Fp, so it's easy. And then I'm going to look at, I can look at all isogenies between two different deformations, but now I can restrict this to the special fiber, and then pull it back to the map on the FNs, FN always has these powers of Frobenius, deformation. So a deformation of Frobenius is exactly one of those. Just a power of the Frobenius. The K, the index, is the power.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry.